The never-ending debate that Reading FC's 2019-20 season is over got put back a little bit this week as Reading decided that actually there is something worth playing for, but perhaps not the competition that we're used to going into. It's the FA Cup season this year, really, as Reading progressed into the last 16 of that tournament with a penalty shootout win over Cardiff, the series decider of that, if you will. And the benefit of that as well is that we don't have to play Sheffield United for a month. So we've got a month of season to look forward to. But in the meantime, we are playing in the championship of, well, not much to really say about that, as we as we'll find out after our 1-1 draw with Hull. Welcome to the Tireless Den Podcast, episode 220. I'm your host, Mark Mayo, as per usual. And joining me this week is a man who has been recently promoted. Not very Reading-like, is that really, Adam?
No, it's not. To the
prestigious title of assistant editor of the Tireless Den website. Adam Jones, it's your second appearance on the podcast now, is it, after the Christmas special?
It is, yeah. I enjoyed the Christmas podcast so much that I thought, well, I might as well come back again, you lucky people.
Yeah, well, absolutely. The thing is, as well, is that we always like some fresh blood, and Adam is certainly adding the youthful element to the podcast that I suppose we used to have a little bit that is now drifting away from us, certainly, as we move forward I don't even want to start thinking of how many years I've been watching Football Club now. Well over 15, I'd say. Which, to be fair, I say that's quite a long time. There's probably people listening to this who have had a good 40 years on them.
I mean, I've probably been watching Reading now for well over 10 years. And it just gets larger and larger amount of years. And it's just, wow. Yeah, it's mad to think that I started watching when I was watching like Stephen Hunt and Kevin Doyle, and people will listen to this and think, my God, you must be so young. But for me, that just ages ago.
Well, and I suppose as well, because this is almost certainly going to go down as one of those seasons which we've had over the last 5-6 years, which do kind of merge into each other as a not much going on. And certainly when I started watching Reading, I think for the first 10 years all the way through to like 2013, from sort of 03, something happened every single year. And I suppose this season we do have a reasonable chance of something, you know, a thing to remember, basically.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me of 2014-15, really, when Steve Clarke took us to the FA Cup semi-final. When I remember coming here and him, like, getting results, getting some good results on the board, but never really kind of taking us by storm and us thinking, my God, this is going to be, like, brilliant. And I'd even kind of say that Mark Bowen has had less of a feel-good factor on the club, even though he has, than Jose Gomez. And look what happened to Jose Gomez. So I think for me, it's all about cautious optimism. It reminds me, again, very much of the 2014-15 season. But we need to make sure that we get 50 points on the board, really, before we fully focus on the FA Cup. I'm always wary that if we keep on flirting with relegation, we might well go down to League One. So I think we're safe this season, hopefully, but we just need to build on this, build some momentum going into next season for sure.
Well, absolutely. And at the moment, we are 10 points clear of the relegation zone, but there's significant amount back. What is it now? Is it a full 11 points off the playoffs at the moment, which it's not insurmountable, but 15 games left. It's kind of drifting. So let's jump into the recap then and talk about that whole game, and then we'll spare ourselves some joy towards the end of the recap and talk about the Cardiff win.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
So, 1-1 draw it was against Hull on Saturday, and this was, Adam, for me, I went into this game thinking if we win, the whole, you know, dream of the playoffs and something like that is still just about going to be a some kind of reality. But as the game went on, Hull started relatively decent, hit the post within a couple minutes. We took a bit of time. Feels like we've started games quite slowly in recent weeks, but we got the goal. Could have made it 2 just before they got their equaliser. And really, it just left, you know, leaving the mad sad or watching it on, as people watch on iFollow or anything, just a full-time whistle. It's just one of those games that left you a bit empty and left you thinking, oh, we're back to being one of those teams. Because I'd at least thought that the graduation to mid-table that we'd had at least meant that certain home games were going to turn up, have a good time, win the game, and all be well. It just didn't happen this weekend.
Well, I said in my match preview I was expecting Hull to bounce back after their 5-1 defeat last Sunday. And I said, it's not going to be easy as people think, even though I did still expect to win. And the fact that Hull did come down to the Mazdad and they didn't look like a side that had been beaten 5-1, but it was still like both sides were just poor. And I think for me, we've been saying that too much under Mark Bowen, even though we've got some very good results, you know, Fulham, Preston North End, and he has to be commended for that. But yeah, some of the performances are quite disappointing, and I just hope that we can gather some momentum now going into the business end of the season, play some good football, and leave fans feeling like they've been entertained and that they've got full value for money.
Well, one of the things, we'll listen to what Mark Bowen said after the game in a few minutes' time, but one of the things that Mark Bowen said was that basically we were knackered after the Cardiff game, and you could kind of understand that. I think certainly players like Swift, Mate, Morrison had played a lot of minutes going into this weekend's game. But for me as well, there's just a lot of pretty average, sloppy performances in there. I felt like Swift, certainly the first 45 minutes, was a really, really below par performance. Ovie Ejaria is becoming a player as well that is starting to grab attention for the wrong reason. We've got a couple of questions in the mailbags. We'll talk more specifically about him in a minute. But Sam Baldock as well, I didn't really feel like got into the game very much. We're struggling at the moment from a lack of players standing up and being counted in the way that at times in this season we've always had one player to turn up with a brilliant performance and that sort of drives us on. But This sort of spell we're on over the last few weeks, we've not had one standout performance where I said that player has been brilliant. We've actually just had a lot of kind of 5, 6 out of 10 performances, and it's no surprise that therefore we're not losing many games, but we're just not winning them either.
Yeah, I think I saw someone say I can see why Rangers fans got so frustrated with Ovie Ejaria, and the concern for me for him really. Is that if he does lose his confidence and if his form does tail off dramatically, he might struggle to get it back. I've heard rumours that he's quite a shy person within the camp. So hopefully he can get his form back, because when he is on form, he can be one of the best players in the division. No questions about that. I'm disappointed a little bit about Baldock. I think he's usually a reliable source of excitement for us. Let's hope that he can put in a better performance. I mean, he always puts in the hard yards, and I'm really glad that he stayed at the club, actually, because he gives us a little bit of a different option going forward. We can now play in a two, and even though fans were saying at the end of last season, "Oh, sell Sam Baldock," we always knew that he was going to be a really good Championship player. There's a reason why he got promoted with Brighton, and Masika coming in as well gives us a different option going down the wing, and we can play a range of different formations therefore. Because imagine if we had sold Baldock. I mean, we've loaned out McNulty, Lucas Shaw is now injured, Puskas is off form, so it's really good that we do have Baldock, even though he may not be putting in the best performances.
Yeah, well, that's the thing as well, is that we've got options, which is nice in terms of if we do want to change around the team. Mark Bowen has not really changed his league team too much recently, but then we have had a lot of cup games as well. So maybe that's something that we've still got quite a few games coming up that he does decide to change. One, I suppose the best aspect of Saturday's game, of course, was Jordan Obita's goal. It was a really nice aspect that he got it against the team, no disrespect against Hull, but it's obviously against the team that he picked up his really bad injury a couple of years ago now. So that was obviously really pleasing to see. And it was a good goal. What I would say about it is that it was the one moment really when a player gambled into a new position. He brought himself out from the left, got into a decent position in the box. It was a nice little move and a good ball in. I think it's Swift who laid him on. And he was in the right place at the right time and got the finish off. And that goal is kind of the thing that we've not scored too many goals. We've not been on a complete dry spell, but it is the sort of thing that I think in a 3-5-2 specifically, if players just stand in their positions, especially the centre mids who don't advance too far forward, it does feel quite easy to defend against. The two men up front can only do so much, and therefore you do need a bit of invention. And it was nice to actually, you know, that kind of got proven in a way that Obita got the goal.
Yeah, I think he can be a game changer as well with his set piece deliveries. I mean, this is one set piece that wasn't talked about a lot, but I remember his free kick against, I think it was Charlton, under McDermott in the 15-16 season, where Reckles got his first goal. And the ball was just outstanding. I mean, we could have scored twice really from it. Once from, I think it was McShane, who could have got a header in, and it bounced out to Reckles, who slotted it in. And it gives us a different option down the line. I mean, I think the dream for me would be for him to become captain, McIntyre to become one of our first choice central defenders, Osho to become one of our first choice central defenders. I mean, for me, I think it's great that we have an academy graduate really making an impact on the first team squad, like Rinomota. I think if we can base our identity off that, I think it would be excellent. I mean, I think that's the reason as well why we have to get to 50 points, is that when we do get to that magic mark, we can then gamble on some of the younger players. I mean, I was disappointed a little bit by Teddy Howe, but if we can give some of the younger players a good go, then it can inspire the academy to say, right, this is the chance that you could get if you put the hard work in. I mean, we've seen it with Medford Smith and House as well.
Yeah, and that's the thing with the academy players. You do want to kind of form that pathway, and Obita was an excellent ambassador for that. I would say you mentioned McIntyre, that he's currently out for 4 weeks, or maybe even more, is the kind of diagnosis on why he wasn't involved against Hull on the bench. There wasn't really a centre-back on the bench, I suppose, against Hull, because also Matt Miazga's out for 3 weeks, they reckon, at the moment. There was also some talk about Obita as to why he got subbed after his goal. Mark Bowen said after the game that his hamstrings were quite tight and that he's actually played more minutes than anyone else over the past 3 weeks, which is actually something that you have to give him a lot of credit for, because Obita, when he came back into the team, he couldn't do Saturday, Tuesday. So now he basically can. And it's just a bit of a precaution to bring Richards on. And I think Richards had a good game, so there's no sort of qualms for me with that. One quick thing we'll talk about Hull before we jump on to talk about that Cardiff game from the midweek is the goal that Hull scored. I'm tempted to say that it's unlucky, because that the shot that comes in is such a weak effort that if it was more powerful, if it was better connected or properly hit, it bounces off the defender and flies out into the stand. But because it was such a weak effort, it bounced perfectly over the keeper. And I just feel like we're a bit hard done by, really.
Yeah, I think that as well. And maybe that is because I saw it on the slow motion replay, but it seemed like the whole striker could have got his sunbed out and laid on it and then taken the shot, and he'd still have time. Maybe it was because it was slow motion, but I think Morrison did stand off a bit. But can I really be too critical? I don't think I can, really. I mean, he's been very good since he's joined the club, and I can't really blame Raphael either. He was just out of his reach. But again, I mean, considering it was Morrison and Raphael involved in that, and the fact they couldn't really do that much, I can't really blame them. And it's just disappointing that we didn't manage to... I think the most disappointing thing for me, rather than the goal conceded, was the fact that we didn't build on that 1-0 lead that we really needed to. Because I think if we would have got a second goal, I think that would have been it. I think Hull City's head would have dropped after their 5-1 defeat at the KCOM last Sunday. So when we do get into the lead, we need to build on it. I think this doesn't just apply to the rest of this season. If Mark Bowen stays in charge, and I'm saying if, then he'll need to carry this on into next season. When we score one goal, we can't sit back and defend. I know that, I think he was a defensive coach, wasn't he, at Stoke City, but we still need to go forward and try and get the second and third goal like we did under McDermott the first time.
I think most of the coaches at Stoke were defensive coaches, to be honest. I don't think there were many technical.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, let's hear from Mark Bowen then, and then we'll jump back after he's given his take on the whole draw and have a little word on the FA Cup victory at Cardiff.
So the game has been, you know, I thought we were actually quite fortunate, Rich, to get our noses in front. And then you're thinking we should see the game out. I think my overall take of the game today was that we looked a team that was fatigued. You know, maybe coming out of the 2 hours that we played against Cardiff on in the middle of the week. I think it sort of manifested itself today in our play. We were sloppy in possession, gave the ball away too many times. So then it becomes like a basketball game. You know, I've said in the past that you've got to be, you know, with the players that we've got in the team, the quality that we've got to try and be more in charge of our own destiny. You know, getting the ball, creating the tempo of the play and being comfortable in possession. And I thought today our passing was sloppy. You know, I look back and I think, well, you know, it possibly was. It didn't help, certainly, in terms of the fatigue, mental and physical, that we were probably suffering from the midweek game of Cardiff, you know, and too many of our players today were off it, you know, not nowhere near the standards that they've set.
So 300 minutes, 10 goals and 7 penalties were what it took to separate Reading from Cardiff. And I must say that it really wasn't a surprise that it took this much. It really feels like I've got a Cardiff mate at work who we knew this game was going to penalties from the moment it kicked off the FA Cup replay.
Yeah.
It really felt like that sort of two very, very evenly matched teams, two sort of changed lineups as well. 3-3 draw, I suppose, on the night. Very fascinating and interesting game. You know, as it's been a few days now, Adam, we won't spend too much time sort of analysing the ins and outs of the game. But what we will say is that it is so much of a relief, I suppose, that we won this game and gave ourselves something to look forward to over the next few weeks.
And three excellent goals as well. You look at all three of them individually. Omar Richards' header, fantastic, right into the corner out of the keeper's reach. Then you've got Rinomota volleying one into the corner, and then you've got Meite as well. And we've also got to mention, like Tim Deller did the other day, his scorpion kick in the first half was incredible. But three very good goals. And also it was a real confidence boost for Shaunay Aluko and Sam Walker, two players really who have kind of fallen out of favour and I don't think they're really trusted too much by the Reading fans. Although now that Walker saved his penalty, maybe that'll change. But, you know, people have been wanting the likes of Southwood, Boyce Clark, Anderson to be given a go over Walker. So for him to save that penalty, the first penalty against Cardiff, I think that will be a real confidence boost for him. It's good in a way that Bowen has put faith in him. And in terms of Aluko, I mean, he's come back from China, hasn't really made that much of an impact, has now got more competition now with Masika coming in, and obviously got McCleary and Ajari can go on the wing as well. So for them too, it was an especially important night, especially for Aluko to net the winning penalty, even though his celebrations were muted. But can we really read too much into that?
No, I don't think. I think the thing is with Aluko is that he's going to take time for him to. So you could argue that it's going to take time for him to sort of fall in love with playing football again, because I can't imagine it was too brilliant a time out in China. I think the team he's playing for got relegated, and being at Reading has not been, you know, couldn't accuse him of saying it's not been a brilliant time for him. So yeah, it was nice to see him get that winning penalty, and he came on against Hull, and I think it's difficult with Aluko because a lot of fans I think jump on his back quicker than they would other players who perhaps haven't earned that early, you know, that sort of extra bit of patience, you could argue. But yeah,
I think it's all about the price tag.
Yeah, it's the same thing with Puskás as well, isn't it? That when you've got a player who costs so much money, you obviously have the raised expectations, and you know, Aluko's back in the team, and I think he's got a contract all the way till the end of next season, so he's not going to go anywhere. We're not going to be able to sell him unless we really take a hit. So that's just how it's going to be. But for that FA Cup run, I suppose you could say that we're on now. Sheffield United is on the Tuesday night, the 3rd of March. And Adam, it should be a really decent night with £10 tickets for adults. South Stand is only going to be half Sheffield United fans. So we're going to have Club 1871 in their usual place. It should be a fascinating game.
I know that the magnitude of the playoff semi-final against Fulham in 2017 and this game against Sheffield United is a lot different. I mean, the Fulham game was really, really important. But if we can get an atmosphere similar to that, and really intimidate the away away players, then we could really do well in this match. I know that Sheffield United, I think they're in the top half of the Premier League at the moment under Chris Wilder. And I was speaking to Luke Anthony, the former head of medicine, the other day about the 2011-12 season. And he said, you know, Sheffield United are a team that has an example of a great team spirit. And I think that's not what all you need, but that's so, so important when you're competing throughout the season. It's also almost more important than getting the players in. So they have a great togetherness, Sheffield United, great manager, great fans. But we can really give them a game, especially if we play a strong side. We could really, really give them a game. And they might also be quite focused on trying to perhaps get into the Europa League, although they might also want to get to an FA Cup semi-final. So we'll have to see what team they put out there. If they put it out a slightly weakened team, I think we have a great chance of getting through to the next round, but we need to be 100% on our A game.
Well, one stat that people have pointed out before this game is I think Reading are playing some ridiculous, like, six times or maybe five times now with the whole game happening between now and that game. And Sheffield's not playing twice. So they probably are going to be quite rested, it's fair to say. The only teams that have beaten them on their travels all season are Man City and Liverpool. So we're in for a tough one. But as you say, I think it's got to be settled on the night. And it's a one-off game, and they might not play a full team. So therefore, you know, we've got a chance, and that's certainly something to hold on to.
I mean, it might even come down to the way that we're shooting in a potential penalty shootout. If we're shooting in front of half of the Sheffield United fans, then it might give the away side quite an advantage. But, you know, it comes down to coin tosses. It might come down to a mistake. It might come down to a moment of brilliance. And that's what's really nerve-wracking, really, for us. But if we do have one moment of magic or one mistake from Sheffield United, that could prove to be the difference. So let's hopefully have a moment of magic. Maybe from John Swift again, like he did against QPR. I think it was on Boxing Day with another long-range strike, something like that. Will do us perfectly fine. But, yeah, let's just keep our fingers crossed that we can get into the sixth round.
Absolutely. Well, one player who we dream of producing those sort of moments of magic is Obi Ajaria. And let's go into now the mailbag, where, as I say, he is the topic of conversation.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
Okay, so Biscuit Analytic comes in with the first question this week. He says, Ajaria end product, is it inconsistent or does he just not have one? Is it just missing? And Lee tags on to that saying, do we need to drop Ajaria to bring some more balance to the midfield and the team generally? On the topic of his end product, I think this is almost the thing that affects his entire game, because he's a confidence player. He's obviously, you know, when he pulls out the skills and everything. And if he doesn't, you know, I'm not saying that he's thinking, oh God, I don't know what to do with his passing or his shooting. But if he has that shot and it goes in the back of the net, that means that everything else is going to fall into play so much better. And the fact is, he definitely has the potential to develop a better end product. But that is the one thing from his game that he just doesn't provide. And that's ultimately the reason that he's not talked about in the same way as, you know, Eze from QPR, or Pereira, the West Brom attacking midfielder. All very similar technical players. All Ajaria on his day can stand up to them, but that end product just isn't there.
I mean, I think on the question of dropping him, and as you say completely rightly, he's a confidence player. So to drop him now, for me, if I was Mark Bowen, I wouldn't, although I can see the case for dropping him, but I wouldn't. I think that we should persist with him, because there's a great chance that he'll come back into the form that made him sign him permanently in the first place. So, I mean, I wouldn't drop him. He is a confidence player. That same argument could be made for Puskas. Maybe he's a confidence player. Maybe we shouldn't have dropped him. But at the end of the day, we need to get as many points on the board as possible. So let's hope Ajaria can come into his own again and really contribute to our cause, which he has done a number of times this season, namely against, I think he had a great week against Huddersfield away, and I think just before that, West Brom as well, the Hawthorns. So let's hope we can have some more weeks like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the question of balance as well, is who do you replace him with? Because Charlie Adam can probably feel quite unfortunate not to have been playing the last few weeks. But in terms of balance, he's probably, you know, even more guilty of not contributing sort of defensively and can make a few more mistakes, maybe give the ball away. So, you know, it's a big question. And it depends whether Rinomota is a player that you want to bring in as a, you know, instead. And that's what Sam Richards asked. He says, really believe we need to get back to playing Rhino in the first 11. I've been quite negative on his impact so far this season, but I saw glimpses on Tuesday at Cardiff that his drive and tenacity was back. We're crying out for some energy and drive in our play. You know, I think it's hard to disagree with the case for Onemoto at the moment. Pele's having a really good time. Swift, I think, is probably the better all-round player than Ajaria. And Rinomota, he is, you know, he's still a youngish player. He's quite an inexperienced player for someone in his early 20s as well. So,
yeah,
I do think that it's a good case to make.
I mean, for me, it's not just about Rinomota's performances. I mentioned this earlier and I go on about it obsessively, and I'm sorry if I do go on about it too much. But the thing for me is we lack an identity. We have done for years. I think ever since McDermott left, I mean, we were known for team spirit. And we even had some academy graduates within the first team in that promotion season. We've got the likes of Carajan and Pierce. And I think it's an identity thing that we do need to get some of the academy graduates involved, because that's what makes me excited. Seeing the likes of Osho at right centre-back, seeing the likes of McIntyre at left centre-back, seeing Omar Richards on the pitch, seeing Jordan Obita link up with him. It really is exciting. It makes me, you know, want to go to every single game possible, because you can really have a kind of a rapport with those players, especially with the likes of McIntyre, who's been supporting the club since he was like six and who's been at Reading for a very long time. I think Rinomota can give us some energy in the middle, just on a general point. But Pele has been playing very well as well. And John Swift was also a very key player at the start of the season, probably our best player at the start of the season. And Charlie Adam has been better than expected. So there's been some real great individual performances. It's just now how to fit the jigsaw together and how to link it all up. Because if it does click, we could be in for a really good future. But again, let's get some of the academy graduates involved, but only if they're good enough. I need to place emphasis on that. Only if they're good enough. I think it would be great if we did get some of them involved.
Well, on that, on the topic of, you know, things not quite falling into place at the moment, it is sort of mentioned it earlier. It is something to bring up, as Tom Harrow Smith does in his question, saying, was that a poor performance or just a case of burnout from some key players? And that is the thing as well, isn't it? That as he says, as poor as Swift was, can't help but think he looked knackered and would have come off had we not had to sub Chris Gunter. And I think it's difficult, isn't it? Because the only thing I'd say against the burnout idea is that we have played in the FA Cup a hell of a lot of different players. But with the fact that we obviously had to go to Cardiff, it was a very, you know, intense game against Cardiff, 120 minutes plus penalties, and we didn't make too many changes for it. Are we happy for the whole result specifically to sort of put it down and say, you know what, it's just a one-off? Or actually, are we kind of worried that it's going to keep happening now with the fact we play on Wednesday, then Saturday, and, you know, the rest of the season?
I think hindsight is going to be a wonderful thing, because if we improve our results in the coming weeks, then we can put it down to a bit of fatigue and burnout. But if the poor performances continue, then there might be something else going on. There might be a deeper problem. As you say, I think we've won like one of our last eight championship fixtures or something, or we remain winless in like eight of our last championship fixtures. So the thing is, we need to improve our form. For me personally, I would have played a slightly weaker side against Cardiff City. I'm not saying it's a weaker side, like a reserve side. But yeah, I don't know. I think we need to judge that in the next couple of weeks. But maybe it is. But we need to be ready for every single game that we go into. And maybe, you know, the fitness regime needs to change or something. But in all fairness, we did play Friday and Wednesday. Is it Wednesday or Tuesday in Cardiff? So, yeah, we're going to have to judge that as the weeks go by.
Yeah, absolutely. And the next question, which I'm just, as you sort of said about that run then, Ewan Cunningham saying, what is the more important stat, the fact that we've had 1 win in 9 or 2 defeats in 16? And Callum as well saying, why do we keep drawing when draws are a fraudulent construct designed to let managers put a positive spin on not winning football matches? Now, I'm kind of interested with the whole draw thing. It takes me back to the 2010-11 season when we drew 17 of our 46 championship games, which is, I think, the most we've ever had. Not since 1990, that's the most draws we've had in a single league season. And that, the thing is, for the reason I bring that up is that the year after we drew only 8. So draws, if you have a lot of draws, for me it kind of goes one way or another. You turn them into wins or you turn them into defeats. You're not just going to keep drawing forever. And I'm kind of more optimistic at the moment that we'll turn them into wins because the sort of draws we're having, you know, the Nottingham Forest sort of mad last minute aside, we are, generally speaking, you know, in the game, we're producing chances. Certainly the whole game is one that I think we'd win most times if we played it again. So the fact that we have had 2 defeats in 16, I think, is just about the more important stat at the moment. Because ultimately, also, we have to put this league season down now as a building season. It's not a season where we're going to get into the playoffs. And if we do, then, you know, you've answered the point that I've just kind of made. So I don't know how you feel on this, Adam, but I'm just about satisfied with the not losing at the moment, with the idea that it's going to build us somewhere.
Well, I think a lot of that, like you said, I think a lot of it is down to the fact that we've been rebuilding now. And I'm trying to cast my mind back. We've been rebuilding as a club for the past four or five seasons, ever since the start of the 2015 season, 2015-16, when we had the likes of John and Vidra come in. We've been building since then. And it's put down, really, a lot of it is put down to decisions that have been made higher up. And I think that's the reason why we've stuttered so much in the league. I mean, we have been quite close in the past couple of seasons to relegation. So now we look at the summer, we now need to make sure that we keep a lot of our squad, the squad that we can afford to keep, and just add a few players, not too many players, because if we can get a good squad together with not too many transfers, then maybe we could build on it. But we need to make sure that we're not rebuilding again the next season, which I don't think we need to rebuild. Maybe we could sign a few of the loan players permanently if the option is there to do that. But I don't think we should be making signings like we did last season. Like, I'm not saying it wasn't necessary, because I think we have had to kind of do that in a way. But we need to be smarter with the decisions that we're making, the players that we're signing, the money that we're spending on players. And if we can get that right, get that balance right, hopefully with Nigel Howe we can do that, then yeah, it should be all right.
Yeah, we need a summer of evolution rather than revolution, I think is the sort of saying with it, isn't it? We need a situation where the team is invested in and growing, but you know, we shouldn't need 7 new first teamers for the start of this season in the way that we kind of did think we did need that going into this season. Andy Taylor asks, is this team already happy it's safe and ready for the end of the season? We've spoken a lot in this podcast, Adam, actually, about the sort of team spirit and squad mentality. Is there, you know, watching that whole game and the last few weeks, is there a sense that the players kind of know this season's over? Do you think that Mark Bowen would, or not Mark Bowen, but do you think maybe a few of the players would actually say, you know what, let's end the season now and start again? Because it's difficult to, you know, the whole mentality of being on the beach and everything, it can be difficult, I think, to shake off.
Well, I hope they don't have that mentality. I think we do need to get to 50 points before we do anything else. Like I said earlier, I think once we get to that 50 points, we can gamble on some of the younger players, integrate them more into the first team, the likes of Osho. I think Osho's done very well. It's disappointing, as I say, about Barrett and Howe and the way that they've left. I would have liked to see them get given a bigger chance, but I really hope that the squad isn't on the beach yet, because a few more losses and we could slide down the table. I'm not saying that we're in immediate threat of relegation or we're going to be dragged into it, but with a few losses, that could happen potentially. If draws do in fact turn into losses, then it could be quite dangerous for us, not just now, but also for our long-term future. We need a mid-table finish this season, a comfortable mid-table finish for our future, because the last couple of seasons just haven't been good enough. And we've been a sign of a team in the last couple of seasons, of a side that's kind of on their way down. I think Wigan did it in the Premier League like a decade ago for a few seasons of just being at the bottom, and finally they fell through the trapdoor. And that was strangely the season they won the FA Cup. But we need to make sure that we consolidate our status as a real strong Championship side. I think that's the most important thing to do.
Maybe that's actually something that we need to, a discussion that we need to have this season. Would you take relegation if you meant winning the FA Cup? I think so. That's the thing, we've had it before, a couple of years ago at least, maybe in that Steve Clarke season actually. I think that you're absolutely right when you say about the sort of being able to breathe the young players in and everything like that. But I think it's more than that as well, that over the last few seasons we've not known what division we're going to be in until the best 3 weeks before the end of the season, and therefore we haven't been able to plan what's happening, and you're already, you know, 4 or 5 weeks behind the likes of, you know, the sort of rivals we have, Sheffield Wednesday, Birmingham, no Derby, those sort of teams that we're kind of on the same level as us financially and as a club, and therefore they're ahead of us, and therefore we're playing catch up, and that, you know, it's really difficult, I think, as a club. The planning is such an underrated thing as a fan for how important, how well your club does, and let's hope that this season, with that much, you know, that much vaunted mid-table finish we hope to get, we can actually do that for next season. Final question is from Matt Castle. He's asked, are people genuinely happy with the negative defensive football implemented by Mark Bowen? I understand that we saw a huge upturn initially, but I can't stand watching us going into every game playing like underdogs. We have a manager with no philosophy. Now, do you think, Adam, do you think that's true, that Mark Bowen doesn't have a philosophy?
I think the fact that we saw the likes of Yapstam and Jose Gomez coming in and stating that they wanted a passing philosophy, the fact that Mark Bowen hasn't really done that, although he has stated certain things about, right, I don't want it to be completely passing football, I think that's the reason why people are kind of thinking that he doesn't have one, as well as, you know, we've played quite a few direct balls. And I think a lot of teams now in the Championship playing passing football, when it's becoming kind of a dying thing to play more direct football, because it's less, I think it's even less fashionable, really. But in terms of his negative kind of philosophy, in quote marks, it's for how long fans are going to be willing to put up with it, because his contract has been extended, I think, Mark Bowen's, to the summer of 2021. And if we continue to play negative football, people are going to say, don't extend this contract any further. And that's even if he lasts until then, which for me, I feel awful saying it, but I don't think he will. If this form carries on, will he even make it past the end of this season? We don't know. I hope he does stay. We definitely need some stability. But he wouldn't have been my first choice, like everyone's, really. When Jose Gomez was sacked, I think we needed experience, for sure. I think we needed someone like Chris Hughton, even though we may not have been able to afford his wages. I think the manager that we're crying out for is an experienced person.
I think he's got a relative amount of experience. It's just as the sort of the number two, basically, which boils down to the question of, does that sort of count as experience? Obviously, it's experience at a really high level, but we don't know as to, you know, was he Mark Hughes' number two crying out to be number one, or was he, you know, happy with his sort of time? I think as well, when it comes to you know what we wanted as a manager, I think, I don't know if the fans necessarily wanted a manager with a specific philosophy. As you say, that Gomez and Stam had a real this is how I play football sort of thing. But do we think necessarily that managers with philosophies are the, or what you would say is, you know, you can pigeonhole them almost in the same way Klopp and Guardiola, you can pigeonhole obviously very effective managers. But do those managers necessarily, certainly in the Championship, do they do the best? Would you say that Bilic is a manager with philosophy? Would you say that, you know, Gary Rowett is very successful at this level? Is he a manager with philosophy? So I'm kind of wondering whether it's actually something that is so important in the Championship.
Well, exactly, and we're going back years now, but you think of our most successful managers, we've got Coppell, McDermott, Steve Clarke, who guided us, probably not one of them successful, but Steve Clarke, who guided us to an FA Cup semi-final and was very promising at the start of the 2015-16 season. They didn't really have a certain philosophy, did they, really? I don't think they didn't come in and say, right, this is the way that I wanted to play. Even Adkins came in and did have a certain philosophy, and in the end that kind of did fail. But again, come back to Steve Clarke's point, he left us when we were just outside of the playoff zone. I think the reason for his sacking was because he went off and talked to Fulham, which is a cardinal sin, really, when you're looking at a team which is at a similar level at the time. You're going to speak to another club. It just doesn't show any loyalty. I don't think philosophy is all that important. I think the players obviously need to know it, of course, but I don't think someone needs to come in and say, right, this is the way that I want to play. They have to be adaptable in the Championship because there's so many different scenarios as well. You know, I think what happened with Stam is we were too stubborn with the passing philosophy when things were crying out for more direct football. I remember a Burton Albion game, I think it was 2017-18, away, and we changed our philosophy a little bit. I think it was Tommy Elphick's debut as well. And we changed our philosophy slightly to be more direct, and we ended up doing really well in that game. So it just shows, really, that managers need to be adaptable in the Championship because, you know, you can get worked out really easily if you keep the same philosophy and are too stubborn with it.
Absolutely, yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? You do, if you stick to one thing rigidly, I think that I've said before on this podcast that it's almost as if Gomez and Stam turned up in the Championship thinking that none of them had highlights packages where they could go and look back at their teams, and, you know, they did that, or the opposition, and they worked out what to do, and then they beat us. So, yeah, it's a thing. I think the thing is, the wider philosophy and sort of Bowen debate, I do think that he is going to be manager till the end of the season. I don't personally think there's any doubt in that. But as we go forward, it is as always with these sort of things, it's a measure against success. And I think Bowen has achieved a reasonable amount of success over the past few months to just about hold off on that, on the debate of success versus entertainment. I think he's just about doing well enough at the moment. So we'll move on then. As a very chunky mailbag, despite it being a one-all draw, I really didn't think many people could have anything to say. But I suppose that is that's the case of the late equaliser, maybe. But we'll move on now to News Bites and see what's been going on around the club the past week.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Not too much news to cover this week, but we do have a Tireless End Award to hand out. That is the January Player of the Month. It has gone to Pele. And Adam, this was a very clear-cut sort of decision in terms of he's been man of the match a couple times, runner-up a few times as well in our player ratings, 50% of the vote. And really, I think this has been, in January, his best month. And really, we talk about why Winamoto's not been in the team. It's been the month where he has solidified himself as a really decent option and actually not a bad signing.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only downside to his loan signing is the fact that we might not be able to get him cheap back to Majewski at the end of the season from AS Monaco. But he has done very well. I think it took him a little bit of time to settle in. There's still a few questions about his passing ability, but he's doing a good job at the moment. And if he can inspire the rest of the team on to get a few more wins this season, I think he's done a very good job, and we could count him as a very successful loan signing. I think people were, again, unconvinced at the start, but he's done a very good job considering. And I think, you know, it's good having that person who can kind of tackle in the middle and can really contribute to our cause. And it's testament, really, that he's managed to really kind of solidify his place above the likes of Charlie Adam and Rinomota alongside John Swift and Ajaria. So yeah, you know, completely well-deserved award, and well done to him.
He is the player, really, he's the player that has benefited most from Bowen coming in over Gomez. I would say probably Morrison has benefited a lot. Probably Jordan Obito as well has really flourished, but obviously his fitness plays a big part in that. And, you know, probably Yaku Meze as well has also benefited, and Sam Baldock. But for me, he is the player that the most beneficial from Bowen coming in and changing the philosophy and also just getting the best out of him.
So the thing is with Meze is that with him, we thought that he wouldn't do as well when Paul Clement left, because he did very, very well under Clement. But then he managed to solidify his place as well under Jose Gomez. And now he's continuing his good form. And even though, you know, we had the sad news of his dad's passing, he's done very, very, very well. And it's, you know, he should also get a special mention because he's adapted to England very well since his arrival back in 2016. And he's become a really, really useful player for us, and a goal scoring threat as well to go with that. I mean, he started off as a winger when he came here to Reading, but he's done very, very well.
He has, and that's probably, you know, he's probably already a good contender for the February Player of the Month award, which obviously we'll be having in due course. Let's quickly round up what's been going on around the club then this week. The under-18s, they're not in action until the 15th because it's a bit of an international break for them at the moment. That's against Man City in the under-18 Premier League Cup semi-final. In the players who are away at the moment on that sort of international break, the England under-17s have goalkeeper Konya Boyce-Clark and the defenders Nelson Abbey and Imari Samuels in their squad. So well done to them for getting a call up, and good luck to them. The women's team, they were meant to be away to Bristol on Sunday. As you might be able to tell, regular listeners, that I've moved into a smaller and less windowed room for this podcast, because as it is stormy as hell out there, it's windy, and certainly my microphone would have picked up the cascading onto the windows that was taking place. So that game's been cancelled, as a few games, quite a lot of games really, have over this Sunday across the country. So Reading women not playing on this weekend, but they are playing at home to West Ham on Wednesday night. The under-23s, they're in action against Swansea. I mean, I was actually planning on telling you the score to this game, but Reading's website has really helpfully not updated with the Swansea result. And, well, neither is the Academy Twitter, so quite frankly, someone knows what happened against Swansea. But yeah, they're next in action against on the 17th of February, 7 p.m. kickoff, Monday night. That is against Middlesbrough at the Mad Stats. So get yourself down to that. And yeah, that's what's been going on around the club. Not too much, but with plenty of first team action to talk about, let's move on now to big match preview as the league leaders come to the Mad Stad on Wednesday evening.
There's another huge game ahead for the Royals, so be loud and be proud for the big match preview.
West Brom, it is. They've only lost 4 league games all year, but 2 of those games have come in the last 3. That is before the Millwall game, which is taking place as we're recording this. So West Brom are is this a sort of game that might actually benefit us, Adam? They've conceded at a rate of less than 1 goal a game on the road, and we've scored so few goals at home that only about 5 teams have scored less than us in the Championship. So not a great sign for us scoring loads of goals, but I also feel like we've got a decent chance of keeping them at bay. So kind of like the Bristol City game the other week, I suppose, kind of like the whole game, 1 goal either way could settle this, and we've got a decent enough chance of it going in our favour.
I think maybe I'm being a little bit too optimistic, but we do sometimes raise our game for a team against a team which is of a higher calibre. I think the thing is, with Hull, we were very complacent. I think the fact that they lost 5-1 in the previous league game kind of made us think, oh, this will be an easy kind of game to complete. I think, you know, they were saying on BBC Berkshire as well, this might be 4 or 5 nil, and confident. I thought we were going to probably win 2-1 or something, or draw 1-1, in which we did in the end. But I think we'll raise our game. I think questions will start to be asked if we do lose the next couple of games, even though one is against, as you say, West Bromwich Albion on Wednesday night. But we need to now put in a solid performance. I think the performance is going to be more important than the result on Wednesday night. And that's, I say that, I don't say that very often, but I think as long as we put in a good performance, I think fans will accept that, even if we do lose a couple of, like 2-0 or something. But I think we've got to make sure that every player is on their A game, and not just individually. I think we need to work together. We'll need to, you know, linking up together and on the same wavelength. And let's hope we see Masika make his debut.
Yeah, that is the sort of wild card, I suppose, that we can throw into the mix, is Ayad Masika, the Kenyan winger who's arrived on loan for Beijing Ren. We did actually, it's funny, in Felicity Philip Araruna make his debut against Hull off the bench at right back. But yeah, I think you're right. It's one of those games where everyone is going to have to be on top form. If we make mistakes, they are the team that will punish them. So that's just how it is. One, you know, sort of interesting note, I suppose, will be the Howard Robson-Carney factor, likely to be involved. Jonathan Bond, former Royal, on the bench as well. A quick word on the reception of Howard Robson-Carney. Do we think that will be a good reception, bad reception, or probably what I would recommend is a bit of an indifferent reception?
Let me just put it this way. We had a couple of boos when Lofondra came back. Yeah,
well, so I think literally you have to be a Steve Coppell level legend to get a good reception at the Medeski, which is a bit of a shame, really.
I think Robson-Carney, I think there's been a lot of bad things, a bit of bad blood between him and the fans. I think especially after he said that running down his contract at Reading was probably one of the best decisions of his life, and he goes on and does a Cruyff turn against Belgium and gets himself a contract with West Bromwich Albion.
Not athletic, he probably got it. As I continue to point
out. Oh, yeah. Atletico Madrid were in for him. I think a couple of top-level European teams were in for him at that time. And it's amazing what one Cruyff turn can do for your career. But, you know, I mean, I don't think he'll get a good reception at all.
No. I think that's probably just how it is now. And as you say, animosity between the fans and Howard Robson-Carney. I can't think of possibly any way that we might have in any way encouraged that by calling him such a thing as an underachiever, or even naming an award after him. But that's by the by, isn't it, really?
I wonder who does that.
Exactly. Predictions then, as we go to this Wednesday night, as I say, 8 p.m. at the Mad Stad. The prediction lead, Johnny got the 1-1 draw against Hull. The rest of us, I think pretty sure the rest of us said wins. So not a, as usually, the, when Johnny said that we were going to draw, I was happy about that, because when we all say we're going to win, obviously we're not. So as one guy said we weren't going to win, I thought that had covered us for the karma, but alas, no. So 3 points to Johnny. I think he's nudged up in joint second place off the back of that with Sim. And Adam, for the West Brom game, what's your official prediction?
My prediction is going to be 2-0 West Brom, I think. Grosicki might come on as a new signing and put one in the back of the net. I think we did luckily miss him on Saturday, because he could have been the difference, really, that he could have got the win for Hull. So I think he will come back and haunt us. I think he will get a goal. Who else have they got? I think Kieran Gibbs is closing in on a turn as well after being injured for quite a bit. And I imagine if Howard Robson-Carney comes back to haunt us as well, that won't go down very well, will it? That would be exactly like Lucas Piazon versus Fulham against us. That would cause that kind of reaction, I think.
Yeah, I think he'd probably celebrate as well.
I think he would, yeah. Because the relationship between the fans and Robson-Carney our fans anyway, and Robson-Carney has just been not good at all, is it, really? Even when he was playing, I mean, I think his nickname by some people was Donkey Carney, and that's just not you know, even when he was playing for us, and I didn't think that was right that he was being called that. But yeah, I think there's just too much bad blood now between him and the fans for there to be even a couple of boos. I think it'll be full boos for him. But I do think that will happen, I'm afraid.
Yes, and in my prediction, I'm probably going to say 1-0 West Brom. I think the fatigue level that came up against Hull will probably continue, though we have got an extra day to prepare, and as West Brom are playing on this Sunday, just double check. Yes, that game has actually gone ahead, unlike some of the others.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's almost that free hit, I suppose. And that does bring to an end the Tyler Sten episode 220. We'll be back next week to review that game, and also Reading have the weekend fixture, of course, where we go to Sheffield Wednesday. So two games coming up this week. Adam, thank you very much for popping by this weekend.
No worries, it's been an absolute pleasure as always.
And we'll be back in a week's time with, I think it's fair to say that this West Brom game is a free hit. It's that sort of game where Reading can go and say, you know what, it doesn't matter what happened against Hull. If we go and win the game, actually that point against Hull might look a little bit decent. And as I said earlier, we will always have, well, certainly for the next month, an FA Cup last 16 game to look forward to. And the season has been extended just that extra few weeks thanks to that. So until then, thank you for listening and come on your arse. You smile, funny how the crumbs always leave a trail, even when it